This is Sitka Spotlights, a series that features local residents sharing their art, work, and traditions with KCAW listeners.
Here's where we'll make the chin. Carving, as you can see, is the art of subtraction.
That's Mark Sixby, hewing a large trunk of red cedar into a traditional Tsimshian mask. Mark grew up in Metlakatla, Alaska, in the state's far southeast.
It's Alaska's only native reservation, so we've got the entire island and 3,000 feet of fishing waters.
As a kid, Mark was encouraged in school and at home to learn about native culture, dance, and food, and his mother was a versatile artist.
She was a basket weaver. She wove red cedar and yellow cedar bark into baskets, hats, backpacks, cedar mats. She just always had projects running, so she never sold anything. She would occasionally, you know, barter for masks and paddles and cool stuff, at least until I started carving. Then I could keep her stocked. My family had a number of objects. We had halibut hooks and fishing net needles, weights, bentwood boxes, goat horn spoons. We actually had the alder spoons my mother and her siblings ate, you know, like fish soup with when they were little kids.
But despite what he had at home, Mark started to notice that many Northwest Native objects lived in faraway museums rather than in the communities where they had been made.
The museums, you know, around the world, about in the 1800s and the early 1900s, were snatching this stuff up like crazy. So most of it left Alaska, but I had the good fortune to travel a lot. I got to see the collection at the Smithsonian. I got to go to the Museum of Natural History in New York. It was always a little bit disconcerting. You see these great works of art, and on one hand, you know, being inspired and seeing your own history, but on the other hand, being mad that I had to go all the way to Washington, D.C. or New York to even look at the stuff in person. The belief amongst anthropologists and museum people from around the world was that this culture was just doomed, you know, that the people would not be around making this stuff, so let's get it now while we can.
Obviously, this assumption was false, and Mark got the chance to learn from a number of carvers when he was a teenager.
Can you talk a little bit about the art teacher you had and how you came to woodwork when you were young?
Yeah, so I learned from a man named Jack Hudson in Metlakatla. He taught art, Tsimshian art specifically, at Annette Island School District for about 33 years, I think, before he retired. I started taking the class in the 7th grade and just didn't stop.
Mark hasn't always been a full-time carver. He left for college in 1998 and joined the Marines 4 years later, serving as a combat correspondent in Iraq. He eventually came back home to assist his old carving teacher, and he arrived in Sitka in 2014 for the Sheldon Jackson Museum's Native Artist Residency. He has stayed on to teach, learn, and absorb influences here. Earlier this year, Mark began teaching introductory formline design at the University of Alaska Southeast.
Can you explain what formline art is?
I usually explain it like it's a visual grammar. It's the convention for painting and building designs with a set of shapes that can be, you know, kind of stretched or made thicker or square to represent the different crests and clans of people. So if I draw a wolf, say, you know, it's not literally a wolf, that would be my clan, you know, my mother's clan. So we have four clans in the Tsimshian. We have the eagle, wolf, killer whale, raven, lakshki, ganhada, gisbuit, wada, lakibu. It's kind of like, say, if you want to speak poetry, you have to learn the grammar of your language. And it's sort of a visual language in that you have to understand the principles of it, and then you can worry about the aesthetic.
Mark says the word tradition was commonplace where he grew up, but it's tricky to define.
My sort of take on tradition is, yeah, it's popular consensus for a given place. So the conventions of Northwest design, say, you know, ranging from the Nootka, the Bella Bella, the Kwakutl, and then up to Alaska with the Tlingit Haida and Tsimshian, a lot of the conventions are the same, but from place to place you have a lot of specific things about what people expect to see. It's a lot of fun, really, if you come from one tradition to move to a new town. So I'm not from Sitka, but I'm here, and I've been able to absorb a lot of really, really high-end traditional Tlingit art in this town. I think from being in Sitka, my color choices, you know, my color palette's shifting. I really do like the blue-green that goes on a lot of things here. I see my flat design, you know, becoming maybe thicker, bolder, more Tlingit looking, I guess. There's a boldness to Tlingit art, and there's a self-assurance, a certainty to the way a carved piece is by a trained hand versus, say, somebody who just out of the blue decides to carve a totem pole.
Aside from technique, Mark says a wood carver needs to understand the place, culture, and people that gave birth to that particular art form.
Without some immersion, there's a lot of soul missing. So I think the soul of work is something that you have to absorb. You know, you have to know the people. You have to respect where it's coming from, I think, before you get that self-assurance in the finished product.
The sun is out now. That means I need to work quickly because you run the risk of very large cracks, but I think we'll be just fine.
The transformation from cedar trunk to mask is nearing its end, though about a year of precise shaping and painting remain. Mark has several ongoing projects. He'll spend some mornings at Rain Dance Gallery carving miniature totem poles, an afternoon giving carving demonstrations at Sitka National Historical Park, and another day in Metlakatla preparing an 8-foot totem pole that he plans to raise there in memory of his mother. I asked Mark what mentorship looks like for him these days.
For me, if I'm looking for influences, I look at, you know, do I want to be like this person too, and as well as what they're doing. I remember being in high school going down to the Longhouse when we had a carving studio upstairs. They would just be working on stuff, and they were in their 50s, you know, these cool old rock and roller guys carving things and just being really artists who are people that you like. Down the road when I get students, you know, I hope they look at me like maybe I got it together. So not just the carvings, you know, I'm fairly confident in where my work is at, but I'm hopeful that I turn out well.
And all those masterpieces stowed away in museums? With Facebook and internet, it's far easier now for Mark to see works by colleagues and forebears than it was when he was younger.
A really valuable resource, I gotta say, Tommy Joseph here out of Sitka, he's got a thing, he calls it the artifact of the day. He spent a number of years traveling to all these different museums, and they let him into the vaults, you know, the collections. He took thousands and thousands of photos, so every day he's posting things online for us to see, you know, that are hidden away. So even if you make it to these museums, you're not going to see nearly everything they have. And so it's exciting we live in a time where we have such access, I think, because to make anything new traditionally, you have to stay informed by the old pieces.
Mark explains that whether it's a mask, a drum, or a totem pole, a new piece's ultimate purpose in some ways has more value than the artist who made it.
Now, you know, in the marketplace, we look for names and people with stories. The artist becomes like a brand almost, whereas I think traditionally, you know, it was more about, well, who is this piece for? Who does this represent? When I talk about the art I love, it's almost always old pieces. The old work had this sort of mysterious quality to it. People look at it and sort of want to deconstruct. Oh, how did this come to be? What steps went into making this? But more importantly, you know, what was it used for? What relevance did this particular piece have? If it's a mask, you know, well, whose face is that? Who does this look like? What was it made for? So, say if a person of the Raven clan wants a button blanket for their granddaughter, you know, that's a really big honor. It's something that's going to see life on the dance floor. You know, if I'm making a mask for performance purposes or drums that are going to be played, it really hits you on a deep level, and I think what I do for the marketplace is practicing for that.
That was Mark Sixby, Tsimshian woodcarver living in Sitka. This was the first of Sitka Spotlights, a series that features local residents sharing their art, work, and traditions. Thanks to the Island Institute and the Sitka Fine Arts Camp for making this series possible through the Sitka Fellows Program.